Welcome to Becoming is Messy, where we dive deep into the journey of survival, transformation, and everything in between. I'm your host, Megan Dawson, here to share the honest, unfiltered stories behind my own process of becoming. Life isn't a pretty and perfect straight line, and neither is becoming the person we're meant to be. Here, we embrace the ups, the downs, and all the beautiful, chaotic, messy moments that shape who we are. Whether you're in the thick of change or reflecting on past transformations, this space is for real conversations about what it means to grow, stumble, and rise again. So get comfy, settle in, and let's get messy. Hello, fellow and future messies. Welcome back to Becoming is Messy, the podcast where we unpack the truth and transformation is rarely linear and it's never without some deep soul-stretching mess. Today's guest is someone who gets that. Anthony Trucks is a former NFL athlete turned transformational identity shift coach and the host of the All Shift podcast. His life has included foster care, loss, professional sports, business setbacks, deep personal breakdowns, and eventually a breakthrough that would reshape his identity from the inside out. Anthony doesn't just talk about grit and mindset, he teaches people how to reprogram their identity at a cellular level. And his story? Well, let's just say it has a few all-shift moments of its own. So let's get to it. Anthony, thank you so much for joining me on Becoming is Messy.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Awesome. Help us set the stage for today's conversation and just give us a little bit of insight of your life today and what's going on in your world these days.
What's going on in my world? Well, a lot in a good way, though. There's a lot of craziness in life.
Yeah.
We all find ways to get busy. No, I have an amazing family, which is the core of my humanity. I've found that I'm a man of God, I'm a man of faith. I got a wife that I love. I got kids that are happy and healthy and that I have good relationships with. Oldest is in college. He's in his senior year now. My twins are entering their sophomore year of high school, and then I'll be an empty nester in like 3-4 years. My wife does master's track, so I get to support her. I have a couple businesses, as does she, but we just kind of have this space where we're able to have a really cool experience of our life. And then when I show up professionally, the goal is to give that off in some way. How can I teach other people to navigate whatever parts of life I might have some insights or experience in to be able to navigate through their hardship faster to get to a cool place? And so I'm not a guy that's like, I'm making $1 million, have a better life, whatever that may mean to you. Show you how to build, like, all the identity to make that happen.
Oh, fantastic. Where's home for you and your lovely family?
I'm in California, Northern California, San Francisco. Okay. Bay Area.
All right. I was going to say, I feel like a double date is needed. I feel like the way you described you and your wife sounds very similar to my husband and I.
Awesome.
He's a triathlete, an Ironman, so I support all of him in that journey. Mm-hmm. And we also are going to be empty nesters in 2 years. So our oldest starts college this August, and then the next few years, the next two. So back to back. So
Beautiful. Yeah,
we're inching close to that.
Yeah.
Thank you for helping set the now. Now, you know, every journey has a messy path. Walk us through some of the twists and turns that have led you to who you are with your lovely family today.
So for me, the family is a core piece because I didn't have family as a core piece growing up. I was given away into foster care at 3 years old. The running concept is that you're a paycheck. Essentially, you are the individual that gives these people money. And if you survive, good. If you don't, you know, it's bad. But they don't really take great care of you. So I had to endure a lot of craziness with a lot of different people. Some was pretty heinous, weird stuff. And then I bounced around over 6 homes. My 6th house, I got adopted at 14, which was after 11 years in the system, 8 years with that family. And the dynamic was I was the only black kid and the only black kid in an all-white family. And so I had to kind of figure out who I was, where I fit. I was the only athlete, kind of the outcast a little bit, but it worked. We had a lot of love and also not a lot of money, pretty poor. And I don't have a sense of self-worth or confidence. I'm a lowly foster kid. Statistically, if you look at any prison in America, 75% of me. So it's not set up to do very well. And over a period of like pretty much a year, I made a massive internal shift through what I call dark work now. That was the thing that catapulted me to being more in line with the understanding that all of us are going to have different lives. So someone's hearing a story right now going, I didn't experience that exactly, but I can say, well, if you felt like people that mattered most to you, you didn't matter most to them. If you feel like you weren't accepted, if you feel like the things that you wanted weren't at some point supposed to be yours, you felt like this is stuff where I had my experience, but we all have these experiences. And I navigated it and pushed through some stuff and created a different outcome. And so I am not unique in a sense of the human, we'll call it human experience, but I am unique in terms of my specific experience. And now I look at life and go, well, I hate some things that happened. Most of them I've learned to really forgive. I don't actually have, when I think about it, much hate. I have a very deep appreciation for the things I really dislike. So I wouldn't like them to happen, but I have an appreciation for who it made me over time.
You talk a lot about identity as the root cause of both our successes and our setbacks. Mm-hmm. What was it that finally helped you see that identity was that missing piece and not just another mindset hack?
It wasn't that I saw it back then. It made sense more near to now. I think it was like my mid-30s. I kind of came across this concept in a meeting with some guys. It was actually in the woods, Jackson Hole, Wyoming, with, like, if you guys are a little, like, Brendan Burchard and Russell Brunson and Dean Graziosi, Lewis House, Trent Shelton, just a bunch of these cool guys. Oh. In the middle of the woods, and we're going around the campfire and asking questions of people's lives and businesses. And so I'd share my portion of it. And I talked about at the time this brand I had called, it was Trust Your Hustle. And one of the guys goes, I don't like it. I go, what do you mean you don't like it? He goes, I don't like it. He goes, I feel like there's a separation between the two most important pieces of someone in your position. I go, what? He goes, well, you have to, the message and the message be the messenger. So message and messenger must connect. If you're the messenger, if you have a great message, but you're the wrong messenger, it won't land. So I go, what? He goes, I like the idea of you as the messenger. You have the ability to talk, the charisma, you've navigated it. He goes, but then the message seems too bland for you. He goes, I don't think you grasp it. Like, there's a uniqueness to the fact you navigated all these different things in life and ended up in this room. He goes, I want to know how you navigated, you know, being the foster kid and then get adopted and then college sports and then, you know, professional sports and finding your biological father and then losing your marriage, remarrying your ex-wife. He's like, I want to know, that's what he said, how you navigated all the different identities to end up in this group with us now. Big, like bold, oh my gosh, like I never thought of it that way. And so I started to spend a lot of time unpacking this concept of identity. And as I looked back at my life, I found that golden thread that every stage I stepped into, from a foster kid to getting a college scholarship, you know, from a college athlete to starting way before I was supposed to play in the NFL, to, you know, coming home and my marriage being good and the marriage falling apart and then getting remarried and building successful businesses. These are not statistically supposed to happen for a guy like me or most people, to be quite honest. But the reality is, when I look back at what I did, every time I was faced with something that wasn't supposed to be, I did some things that rewired me to feel like, you know, I'm supposed to do this. And what it really was over time, I come to find, was that identity shifts. I was learning, honestly, just almost instinctually through different situations, how to lean into something and not feel like I'm supposed to do it or feel like I have confidence in that space, but over time develop it to where at some point I felt super confident and it was who I was to do it. And this isn't something that's relegated to a person like myself. If somebody at one point, you know, wasn't a parent, like when I had my first kid at 20 years old, like it wasn't like I'm a dad. I'm like, oh, I'm a dad. You know, it's like it's a different dynamic. But then the more you do the things that dads do, the more you go, oh no, I'm a dad. Right. So I go, oh, well, same for football. I was horrible at football to begin with. I had a fight, got really good, built over. Business, same thing. Relationship, same thing. And so as I looked at life, I go, all of us have things that we have in our life because we've made these shifts. We just did them without even paying attention to it. So when you ask when I learned about identity, really it was like mid-30s where I go, oh no, if I want to have a better business, I'm going to be met with situations that don't feel like who I am to do it. Yet that is the actual path to what it is I desire. So it's not to do it begrudgingly, but to do it to a level to where over time I go, no, I am the kind of person who does this and identify with it as a human.
Wow. So then my next question was really about those all shift moments. And once you did really have that kind of discovery with identity and started being more purposeful with those all shift moments, what has that looked like? What have some of those all shift moments looked like now that you're doing them purposely?
Well, the first time I started doing this was, so I was divorced.
Yeah.
3 years. It took me 3 years to like have a settle in, come to Jesus, realize that I'm the common denominator in all my problem situation, right? Not that I'm the cause or it's my fault, but either one, I created the problem, or two, I'm allowing it to persist in my life. And this is for everybody. So when I got that realization, I go, shoot, I got to do some things different. I can't keep doing what I'm doing. I want to be in a better place. And so I started making adjustments. And over time, some of the shifts were like having discussions with people in my life that were really hard discussions. Owning the fact that I am the reason why my businesses weren't doing well. And realizing that while I had information, the information wasn't the issue. It was, what was I doing with the information? Who was I? Was I wielding the sword of the insights properly? I've had some moments where I've lost friends and I've lost money and then gained friends and gained money. I've It's just a natural aspect of going through different things, but going through them with a perspective that's different than it was, or at least looking back on them and going, oh, this could have been done differently. And then in doing so, what it really did is it gave me an ability to look to my future and pursue things with the right mentality, which is all of us have a desire for more. You probably want more downloads and more great guests on your podcast. There's people that want more time. They want more joy. They want more relationship connection. They want all these things that are more. And it's this thing where I don't believe you can attain or sustain that more. And you can't attain or sustain anything above your current identity. And here's why I say identity. We haven't even said this. I believe it's who you are when you're not thinking about who you are.
Yes, I love that.
Natural habits, patterns, instincts. Well, it's just how you flow. That's what creates your life. And so for us, when we just operate without thinking about this, I want this thing, but what I'm doing won't get that thing. So I have to elevate all those aspects. And so for me, that's going to be the intentional piece. When I want to make more, have more, I must elevate and become more. And the more happens through an icky, gritty, discomfort, you know, ridden journey. I call it dark work. It's the work in the dark. It's unsexy. It's ridiculed, misunderstood, but it allows you to achieve something, but more so, you internally become the kind of person who achieves at that level. So when I look at wanting to make more revenue in my company to create more freedom and more opportunity for my family, you don't just wake up one day and go, all right, more money coming to me, and it starts raining down. It's like, you know, what do I like? I have to learn new things, try new things, and push out. If I'm faced with a lot of things I don't want to do. I got to hire a team, and I got to train team, and I got to delegate, and I got to handle when they do a good job and when they do a bad job, and all these back and forth. And so if I could bring all this to a culminating statement, we all always talk about growth, but no one really talks about what growth is. So for me, growth is a growth of your identity that is actually naturally able to show up and do what it needs to do to get what has to get done without burning out. You're not burnt out. You're just trying to attain something above your current identity. You know, there.
I heard you say on a previous discussion, you know, that transformation isn't hard, that it's painful. And I think that that burnout state that you're talking about is a lot of times when it just gets too painful. And a lot of times that's where people give up, kind of like at that pivot point where lasting change actually could come. But it's like you have to go through it to be able to get to that.
Yeah, I remember Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Of course.
Arnold Schwarzenegger used to say, the set doesn't begin until it starts to burn.
That's such a good quote.
So when I look at the idea of, like a moment ago, you mentioned to a cellular level, where I talk about this is, if you think about the way our cells work, especially muscle cells, I have to get those to a level of burn.
Yeah,
I need to go to the point where it burns and it's difficult and it's hard. And then once I get to that level of I can't do it anymore to stop, I'm going to be sore for a little bit. It's going to be difficult, but I come back bigger and stronger, faster, better lungs, right? So even your body naturally does this thing that your psychological brain, mind, must also do.
Wow. So, you know, think of the people that do go, that rebuild that cellular level and evolve their identity. At that point, you know, is that your embodiment of peak performance? And how would you describe kind of peak performance in your world?
Yeah. So I believe we all have different areas that our identity shows up in different ways. Who I am with you right now is not who I am with my kids, my coaching clients, with my wife. So I believe peak performance doesn't show up as one singular, you know, we'll call it, the traits are the same. And I think the internal feeling is the same, which is, am I showing up with the best of me? Am I really giving the full breath of who I am in this moment to this person at the way I can express it? When I'm on stage, there's a certain way that I show up. When I'm with my kids, a certain way I show up. And so peak performance is, I think, the ability to operate on all cylinders, knowing that when I stop and I sit back and I review that I can go confidently, I gave what I had. Really, it's not an accident. But a lot of folks have regret because they will sit and look at that moment and go, you know, I didn't actually give my all to that day. I didn't actually give my all to that workout. I kind of showed up and I didn't actually get the outcome. And so if you have that, the idea is to go, all right, I got to push myself uncomfortably just a little more than I think I can to drive pride. And here's pride's a key word here, not in a biblical, what would you say you're most proud of in your life? You've accomplished, achieved, do, family, for whatever. What would you say it is?
For me, it's being a mom. Raising little humans and seeing who they become is the best. Most proud of that, for sure.
How absolutely effortless and easy is that?
That is certainly neither of those things.
And I got three kids. I know what you mean. The thing that I am most proud of, it has been the hardest thing to work with.
It
challenges me the most, build the most, but it gives me the most pride the rest of the stuff in life. So when I look at this identity shift stuff and I'm saying, you know, do I give my full energy to my peak potential? It's, did you give the energy that you're proud of the outcome later? You're proud of who you are later.
Yeah.
Because if you can't step operate at your peak, and until you start feeling that at the backside, there's more room to build, more energy.
Where do you recommend people just get started to help get unstuck there?
So I can, there's a lot of things I've looked at for that. Me, I'm a process guy.
Yeah.
I would be doing a disservice to the world if all I did was talk about this idea of what you're supposed to do, where you should be, what it should
of
feel
course.
Like. And we have created as a company many tools. We have assessment tools we do. If you go to darkwork.com, you can actually take the Dark Work assessment. It'll present to you one of four identities you are, and then it will explain to you what your next step should be based on where you're at currently. But I will say this, overarchingly, you have to be able to pull back the ego so you actually give yourself permission to improve in the area that's most important for your progression. It doesn't mean you'll like it. In fact, you probably won't.
That's so true.
What most people do is the ego, I call it everyone's greatest obstacle. When somebody gives you feedback, you got kids, I got kids, I'm telling them to do stuff all the time. They go, oh, I don't want to do that. I don't need any help. I'm like, okay. And so in my head, I go, it's your ego, right? And when the ego rears up, the ego won't let insights in because it stands to tear down and take, you know, a little bit away from the ego and the status. When you have actually climbed to a certain level and you have some success in an area, you don't realize there still could be eight other areas you are struggling in. That thing is so adamant it doesn't want to feel the pain that it won't bring down the castle gates to let the rest of the insights in to improve it. So you go like, I'm a successful business owner. I don't need any feedback from you. Your wife hates you. Your body's, what are you talking about? No, I'm good. I'm glad you're making more money than me, but I get to spend it with people that love me.
Yeah.
Right. So I don't say that to people often, but the idea is if the ego can come down, you can actually embrace and accept it. You'll find out that there's a great area where you can pursue something that'll actually make you feel better, make progress. So listen, the idea is to ask somebody in your life a simple question, and you have to let them know, I am open to hearing your answer, even if it may hurt my feelings. You got to give that preface.
Yeah.
And what you do is you say, can you please tell me something about myself that you would improve to improve my experience of my life?
That's a great question.
Yeah. Could you please tell me something about my life that you would improve, that you think would improve my experience?
So good. So, yes. What I love about that is, it's something that I can improve to improve my life. To improve my experience,
because how many people do you know? A lot of folks that I know in my life, I see their lives and I go, I love you, but I don't feel like telling you what you need to hear because I don't want to be in an argument right now. So, hey, get the next beer.
Yeah.
Go ahead, hang out. I'll eat that right there. I got buddies who are always like, Aunt, how do I get in great shape? I'll tell you.
Yeah, you're not going to want to do it.
And so I don't say anything. Well, you smoke. You smoke a pack a day, bro. I see the things you're posting. You on one side say, I want this relationship, but the relationship you have with yourself sucks. And I'm seeing that. I can't tell him that, though. I just have to watch him and go, oh, yeah, whenever you let me know. Because I don't want to be in that position to make that person feel that way. And so when you open the gates and let somebody do that, there's this great statement by a guy named, I think it's Tim Murphy, and he says, it's hard to see the label when you're inside of the jar. And so what I'm asking is for someone to give me the label. I can actually open my mind to that and go, oh, great. That's why my jar isn't full of greatness, because the label says you procrastinate, you're unhappy, you're a pessimist, you don't communicate well, you wall off, you're lazy, whatever it may be. When you finally feel that and you embrace it and go, shoot, I really got to work on that. And you do. Not only do you develop a better relationship with that person, but you develop a better relationship with yourself and everybody else you interact with in the future because you've improved your humanity. And people, we know people who are dialed. Like when you walk into a room, you can feel a person who you've never met. You can tell. And so those are the people that you want to be and want to be around.
Way to get there.
Start by asking the people that are closest to you that see the label to give you the real insights and then really listen to them.
Yeah, we all need that person like you and your campfire that's gonna call it as they see it. And to me, the importance of having those few trusted relationships that you could have these conversations with. Because I think that's another thing that not everybody has. And that certainly my husband and I so encouraged. He didn't always have the closest relationships with his male friends. And over the last 5 years, seeing their relationships really come together, I think COVID played a part of it. And ever since then, they go to these types of questions that I think a lot of our women friends, we already were doing. And just seeing the way they show up for each other and help each other grow has been powerful. Yeah. I feel like we all need our kind of core team in our corner to kind of call BS on where they see it and offer us unconditional love at the same time.
And then to celebrate and win, because those people, I found that, because I did this, by the way, it was an accidental opportunity I learned when I was in the middle of my craziness and my 3-year divorce. I had my best friend go, I'm just letting you know right now, you're not the kind of man that I foresee as a best friend for a long time. It's kind of like language in the sense of like, he's like, dude, how you're functioning? He's having a new marriage. This, like, I would show up and he's like, this isn't my best friend. And so it was language that I needed to hear. And I go, damn. And I sat back and breathed it in. It was right. And a person, I wouldn't want my daughter to marry a guy like this, you know? And so it was a catalyst. Gotta have a few of those people around you.
Of course.
If you don't respect them, it won't work, you know? And so you have to find someone who's inside. I respect how they do X, Y, or Z. I can feel that. And then move with it.
Yeah. So thinking of people you've worked with, we've talked about the shift happening in your life. Are there any stories that stand out that you're able to share? Just curious of what type of shift you've seen others make as they do this kind of work.
Oh, yeah, man. One of my clients' name's Frank. And Frank was interesting because, so Frank saw me speak at an event in 2019 for a guy named Brennan Burchard. Frank, he had a business he had sold for $1 million, him and his, one of his partners. And interestingly, he was trying to build back up, but he couldn't find himself in the position of being able to get more off the ground to make more revenue. And so he's like, I was living off of like a savings and making maybe $10,000 a month, which sounds weird, but with he had a business, it's not a whole lot. You make $10,000, you got to pay rent, you got to pay bills. He's like, I was getting by. And so he's like, I need your help. And I talked through some things with him. And the interesting thing that came out was he goes, I sold the business for $1 million, but I felt like it was an accident. I felt like I didn't deserve to have done that as success. I go, oh. So he had an identity that was not in alignment with what the outcome he had was. So I had to start digging around. He's like, yeah, in the midst of it all, he's like, I found myself like a separated from my wife, living in a hotel room, crying in the shower. He's like, this is all going on while I sell the business. So he goes, I feel like a failure over here, but I'm succeeding in business. I just didn't feel like that was supposed to happen. And so we did a lot of digging. And most of the digging was trying to find the proof of his ability and then creating actions that would put him in a position to find and create proof of how great he was, right? We don't realize that our identity usually is, it's going back and searching through the database to go, should I feel confident about that? It's like the imposter syndrome. I have no proof.
Totally.
It's hard, right?
Yep.
To create proof. And we did that. And over time, he got way better. So he went from where he was barely getting by to where 18 months later, he sent me a text message. He goes, hey, I want to let you know that I went and looked at my books with my accountant. He says, from the moment we started working until now, 18 months later, my business has brought in $1,056,000.
Wow.
He's like, I never thought it would be possible. 18 months. And I'm telling you, he didn't have any brand new tools.
Of course.
He didn't have any brand. He just shifted how he showed up with the tools he had, with the insights he had. And that's the big piece, is most folks are sitting there hoping that all of a sudden it's like, I get that new book. I take that seminar. I take that course. We're doing a program right now where people go like, I've taken all the personal development. I'm still not successful. And I go, you could take all you want. I could easily have you go, you could buy a bunch of, I don't know, muscle supplements. If you don't work out, you get bitter. You don't get bigger. And so the idea is that he finally started applying with action in the direction of what he wanted and got better feedback and had more success. And he started identifying more and more with who he was capable of being, shifted higher by doing more. And so he's on a tear now. He's got multiple 7-figure business. He's got events he's running. Like, there's a lot of cool stuff to see from a guy who, if you'd have talked to him a few years back, he would have told you that he thought his success was an accident.
Hey, Messies. Quick pause before we dive back in. If you're loving these conversations and want a little extra support on your own becoming journey, head over to megandawson.com. You can sign up for my weekly email. It's like a little love note from the messy middle, filled with stories, tools, and truths to help you feel less alone. And if you're looking for personalized support, I've got a few spots open for one-to-one coaching. If that's been on your heart, let's talk. All right, back to the episode. I feel like what theme I'm hearing, that cellular level change, is often that feeling of worthiness. That feeling, like early when you talked about his word saying, you know, he didn't feel like he deserved that success because these other aspects of his life, you know, weren't succeeding, you know? And at the end of the day, I think the belief in how worthy we all are That doesn't mean we don't need to make changes in each area of our life and we can do better. But I feel like that shift to me was a shift from not worthy to worthy, and then what is to what's capable, what the possibilities are. And to me, that helps people move mountains, I think.
It does. And the biggest thing I'll say here, if you guys are listening, you hear nothing but this, is none of this can happen with you sitting on the couch and hoping for it and praying for it. Everything happens through experience.
Yeah.
This has been like, when we talk about my work, I call it a dark work experience. And it's critical that the word experience ties in, because at the end of the day, we need to wire ourselves through something. Right? I need to wire myself neurologically, which is the way my brain functions, and psychologically, how I think. And think about the neurologic aspect too, which is crazy. If you actually have what's called eustress, a positive level of stress, because you're trying something difficult and new without going to traumatic levels of stress, you actually have this protein that's released in your brain that encodes more of your dormant DNA. Which is interesting, because it means that hardship makes you more of who you're meant to be.
Yeah. So, that's cool.
I learned it from Doug Peterson. The idea is that in that stance, the experience is the key. And so for anybody here, when I say take action or do something, it's the experience you go through that has, it connects deeper than what any kind of words can give you.
So true.
I could sit here all day and say, be confident, be confident, be confident. But it's not until all of a sudden you take the last step on the top of this 15,000 foot mountain that you stop and you breathe in the air and the sensory and your muscles, you feel it, and you look at this view that you can't put into words that would be there when you physically experience it.
Yeah.
And so when I say that this dark work experience I talk to, you have to go through something. You have without that, it's all thoughts. And you'll every day wake up going, I'm not that person. And you aren't, because you have not done something to experience it.
That's right. That's fascinating. It's anecdotally, I know that that's true, what you're saying. But I never knew about the actual physical impact to your DNA when you go through those types of experiences. I often say that my love language is experiences. You know, I'd love to just build them for my children to experience the world. We're actually heading out on vacation on Monday. And it's just
nice. My
favorite is to put together something that I know is going to be life changing for them, and getting to see them go through that. And thinking of experience, you know, I love how much you talk about your family. And to me, learning about you, so much of your philosophy is just an overarching life philosophy. It's not something that you apply to work. It's not something you apply just to athletics. It's a holistic approach. And with that in mind, thinking about fatherhood and how that was an all shift moment in your life in different aspects, how has fatherhood helped evolve your identity over the years?
A couple ways. I mean, one for sure is you start realizing that you have to look well beyond you. Like, it's when I make decisions and choices about things, it's not just what I want. It's how I be viewed by my kids. If this was to be made public, my kids be proud of me if whatever situation is going on. So everything I do is filtered through. I never want another shoe to drop for my kids in their 30s of like, oh, damn, I heard this thing about dad I didn't know, right? Also pursue big, do well. I want them to meet a stranger in a decade and they go, my dad's Anthony Trucks, and go, holy crap, that guy was amazing. This thing that no one knows about. I want to live my life there. And then also everything for me is a tissue.
There's
always dad talks, you know, like my son, like for example, one time I kept telling him it was raining to keep covering up the firewood. He would open the firewood cover and he'd leave it open. And then the rain would rain on the wood and the wood's wet. And so I'm like, dude, you got to cover us. Third time it happened. Like, all right, here's what's going to take place. Get this 50 pound dumbbell. We have this from our house at the top of this hill, which is about probably 30% incline. It's, you know, it's a good little grade. I go, you're going to walk and run this dumbbell to the top three times. So up and down, up. And it's about 200 meters up. He was crying. His hands hurt. And I was like, you got to learn. You can't cut corners or life's going to be hard. You can't cut the corner, because if you cut the corner, you get no credit for it. So I'm thankful that you went ahead and got the wood and brought it in that one time. But now because you cut a corner, the credit is removed and there's this negative in place. And sure enough, 2 years later, which was this year in football, they're having to run around the end zone for football. And the coaches say, no one touched the end zone green, only the outside. If I see somebody cut the corner, we're all going to end up doing up downs. Every person that cuts a corner, three up downs. They had 30 kids. Yeah. So now he's like, dad, I had to do 90 up downs. He goes, because the kids cut the corner. You see why I had you carry that dumbbell? Yeah, I get it, right? So it's like, it shows up in the place. And I go, what you also don't realize is, say you get a boss. And the job said that the boss says, go out there and clean the front area. And you wipe things down, but you don't sweep. You don't feel like sweeping. So you cut the corner. Well, all of a sudden, he's going to come back. He's going to be pissed because you didn't do your job. Now you're in trouble, and you even probably worked hard to wipe things down. But on top of that, over a while, like, they're going to be like, all right, trucks, get out of here. You're going to lose your job. And then you lose your job. And then what happens? Well, you can't pay bills. Your spouse probably going to be very happy. Your kids can't go to the schools you want. Whose fault is that? Now it's on you. You got this weight, right? Don't cut corners, man. So it's like these things where I see so many different pieces all interconnecting in everything I do. And it does trickle into my parenting because I want my kids, even if they don't get it now, to have these lessons in bed. If it does show up, it's like, oh, and they learn it one time.
Yeah. You mentioned not wanting the shoe to drop for your kids. This is a struggle I have is, you know, those of us that have had, you know, massively chronic trauma backgrounds, it's like we as parents want to protect our kids at all costs and not have that same childhood. Yeah. Those were all shifts that shaped us. You know, it's like I wouldn't trade any of them. You know, you want to teach the lessons at the same time. You don't want the shoe to drop. And at the same time, you don't want them to have pain and hardship. But you know that they're going to. So how powerful to teach them those lessons, you know, in a safe environment, knowing that someday that's going to come back for them in a really hard moment. And that they might not even remember where it came from, but they're going to be armed to be able to face
it. It'll
be
there. You can't rob the kids of a hardship is one of the things.
It's
I have to concoct.
Right?
Because my hardships that built me, I would never want my kids to have to endure the beatings, the starvings.
Yeah.
But there's lessons they can learn. Yeah. I have to create the difficulty. I can create weird ways to do oddball things, but they get the lesson.
You know, what about your marriage partnership? You know, I read a comment that your marriage faced some struggles as your business struggled. Yeah. You know, how did rebuilding your relationship kind of help shape your identity as well? And do you have some lessons just from your view of partnership?
I think your marriage is like your sharpening stone, man. It just is.
I
heard recently somebody says, if both of you were alike, it would make one of you obsolete.
So
the idea is like you have to have the tension, the opposition. It's just the nature of it, and it makes you better.
Yeah.
Marriage is the constant mirror with somebody who you've chosen to be able to hold a stance equal to you and share what they have to share. And you may not like it, but it helps you get better. So my marriage has been a humongous catalyst in my human growth. It was the reason why, like, I got back to a position of going, I want to be a great man. Because it was like, we got back and got remarried after 3 years. We're almost 9 years deep in the remarriage. It wasn't because I wanted my kids to have their parents together. They weren't even a thought, to be quite honest. It was really just, do I want to be with this person? And I did, but I also knew that it was going to be difficult. Like, there's gonna, because it was already hard. I know marriage is hard. You don't really understand what marriage is hard means until you're in the midst of it, an argument over somebody didn't put the dish in the right spot, turns in about the car, and well, you never massage my feet. Yeah. Where are we at? And then we don't talk for 3 days. You know, it's just like wild. But I have a choice. I can do this with a future leg out and be waiting to evade, or like, I'm experiencing this, but I'm not going anywhere. I'm not going anywhere. How do I figure this thing out with this person? And so it forces you to figure it out. And if you can navigate that relationship, you can do it in business. You can do it in parenting. And so my marriage is one of my greatest classrooms. And I learn a lot there. And I fail tests. And then I pass tests, you know.
Yep.
But in doing so, it's what gives me the space and ability and confidence to do what I do in this world. Like right now, I'm here talking to you, right? I don't have to worry about having to find a mate and fix my marriage and do stuff. But when you do, you can't be focused on a vision or a dream. So people think I finally go, I don't want to be, you know, bogged down by my old ball and chain. I'm like, well, if you use language of ball and chain, we can't be friends. I'm not with my ball and chain. She's dope. But I find I'm more free to explore and do things with a marriage. Because part of what my natural idea to seek would be a partner that's taken care of. Is there work to maintain that? Of course. But I'm not going to go meet the parents and meet the cousins and talk about my life. This is extra work I'm going to do. So I can focus on the business. I can build this thing. I can be a great parent. And I can, you know, so it's like the freedom in the confinement of marriage is pretty cool when you actually have a solid marriage.
I love that quote. The freedom in the confinement of marriage is actually cool. And I think that's an important message. That's how I feel in my marriage. But before I felt that, I didn't think that was possible. You know, I too thought that it was going to be too constricted. That was a big fear of mine. We all likely have like a stronger fear of either abandonment or being contained. At any given point, we likely have one of those fears. And I always thought that to be true. And I feel like I'm in a partnership where I'm just encouraged to be my best self. You know, he's encouraged to be his best self. And so we're constantly kind of married to different people because we're constantly evolving and changing and different. And it's fun. I'd love to get that message out there because it's possible.
Exactly.
So the next few questions, they're just a section I call rapid reel. You know, just a couple of just kind of things to get to know you a little better. No need to overthink or anything. But what is there something that you used to believe that success was that you no longer do now that you've embraced this philosophy?
Well, yeah. I think at one point you think success is money. You think success is notoriety, world and fame. And then you start to realize, like, so the notoriety thing is interesting because I've learned that I get up on a stage and then at some point I get off the stage and I go home. They're like, but if my home is out of whack, that I'm going home and spending the majority of my life in chaos, even if I was in love, you know, with everybody loving me and was on stage. The fame stuff is hit or miss, or we'll call it notoriety and status. It's good to have status, but
of course,
at a certain point, it's only good when you're out of your home.
Yeah,
the funny thing about money is a level of form of success if you're looking to make money, which is great. But the idea is if money becomes the only thing and it's not a facilitator of something, a facilitator of being able to give me back my time to spend with my family or to give me the ability to create cool experiences with those that I love. If it doesn't give back to people so I feel like I'm giving back positively to the world, then it's empty. It's fruitless. It's crazy. And so for me, what I found success, to be honestly, is control. Do I have the ability to control my day, my life, my emotions, my responses? Like, can I control myself? If I can do that, I'm successful because I don't have to ask someone for 2 weeks off. I don't have to lose my wits because somebody cut me off in traffic. I'm me. I'm dialed. And that's a different sense of success, in my opinion.
So speaking of the control of your day, now, what does kind of a standard routine look like for your day? You talk a lot about how you're a process guy. So do you have kind of a set? I think we all can learn from, I think that's just another thing is putting structure to our days. They may not all look the same, but I love hearing how people do structure their day because I think it does play into our discipline to be able to live this way.
Oh, yeah, for sure. There's a couple ways that I've structured my day. When it's summertime, I don't have much of a structure because the kids are just here. So I'm always taking them and doing things. Yeah. A regular school day, which is a majority, I get up, take my son to school, or for school there by 6. I'll come back, start my workout by 6:45. 6:45 till about, it's usually like 9 because I'll do 6:45. I'll get home, make my tea, take some, you know, a little bit of like a yogurt or something to get my workout going from about 6 to 7. Hit the sauna from like 8. 6:45, 7 to 8 is my lift. 8 to like 8:30 is like sauna. Then I shower 8:30 to 9. 9 o'clock, my day starts for work, we'll call it. And I go from like 9 to 2:45. It's podcasts. It's sometimes, it's, you know, it's meetings, it's team stuff. And 2:45-ish, 3 o'clock, I pick the kids up from school, come home. And if they have sports, which they usually do when we get to the second half of school, then I don't see them until 5. And so like within that 3 o'clock, I'll still put things down, do something with the wife and hang out. And then at 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, whenever the kids get home, I'm just dad. Yeah. His dad. The weekends are my wife's. Whatever she wants to do, where she wants to go, we want to do. Like, I don't even schedule. I just, yes, ma'am. And so I show up and do stuff. And it has a good balance because during the week, she doesn't really have me. I'm working or I'm with the kids. But to do whatever we in the weekend, it gives her the love language of quality time she desires. I try not to be in a position where I am working to live. So
yeah,
I'm like,
definitely.
I really enjoy the work I do, but I keep it contained, organized, and structured to where I'm not putting it down and thinking about it all day. But I'm also making progress, so I do make the income to make a great impact as an example to my kids and make the time and money to be able to spend time with the kids and the wife.
So cool. I think back to so many of the things we've talked about and the things that people want to be, but they're not taking the action to be that. And I think of the quote that we are what we do. We are where we give our time. And to me, how you just describe where you invest your time, to me, aligns so much with the bigger picture things you've talked about who you want to be and how who your identity is. So I feel like that's always so neat to hear how people spend their time. Is there anything that your younger self would be surprised about in your life now?
Younger self?
Pick a time in life. Pick a time in maybe one of those harder periods of life.
What would he... I mean, the fact that I get to do whatever the heck I want most days, that's pretty good. When you're growing up, what I grew up in, the reality of having nice things and having freedom and the things you see, like, you know, it was back in the day was the lifestyles that are rich and famous. I'm not doing all that. This idea that real, like, I was, you know, like, work to be, I got to slave away at work and do these things I don't want to do. And that's not my reality. My reality, free. Like, I get to get up and I had a workout with a buddy before we hopped this call here. Then I'm chatting with you. Then I get to coach my clients as soon as we're done with our time here in a little bit.
Yeah.
And then from there, I have time to just work on whatever I want to work on. Later, I'm doing a program, doing some live training for some folks. And I just, for me, it's fun because I get to choose what I want to do. And if I don't want to do it, I don't got to do it. And then in doing so, it creates a cool outcome for me, for my experience of life. And then I'm a variety guy. If I had to do the same thing every day, it would drive me insane. And I don't have to. And so it's a beautiful thing that I get to choose what I want. And they say it's a beautiful thing to have, to get tired doing a worthy task of your choosing.
Yeah, to me, that's flow, And you're just exhausted doing what you want to be doing. That's the best.
Yeah.
Is there a mantra or a phrase that you come back to when things are hard?
Smooth seas never made skilled sailors.
Oh, yeah. So
I got
true.
A painting over here on my wall that says that. It's always there. Yeah. It just says smooth seas never made. So I'm like, the things that suck, they suck for a reason.
Yeah.
Not just for no reason. So it's like, for me, if I spend time trying to pay attention to life and realize these problems I have are problems that I asked for, and then I lean into them, I navigate them, and now I have a new skill and I have a new outcome that wasn't there prior.
Yeah. So I have one more question to ask, but before I get to that, Just let our listeners know how they can connect with you and your work. And I will also share all of that in the write-up for the episode.
Yeah, if you go to darkwork.com, you find a lot of stuff of what I do there, how it works, how this whole identity stuff unpacks and unfolds. That's the best place to go.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure getting to know you. And one more question for you. Some of our listeners, they might be right now in their messy middle, low point, waiting for their all shift to happen. When you found yourself then, if you can think back to those moments, is there a piece of advice that you wish would have come sooner?
Yeah, borrowed joy. Mm-hmm. Borrowed. So here's the thing. It's usually when we're having funky things in life, we don't want to be a burden to those that are around us.
Yeah.
So that are happy and joyous. I've never had somebody come to me in a dire situation and me go, oh my gosh, please don't burden me with your downtrodden sadness. It's not how I function. I feel honored that they came to me in a time of need. And so for us, we have these relationships we've built and we don't want to burden them. But then what we do is sit by ourselves quietly and just battle this, where I go, no, if you're low on joy, go around someone who has it and borrow it. Intentionally, I say borrow because I'm going to get it from you. I might have to give it back to somebody later on or give it to you at some point. But I need to borrow your joy, because if I come in here with a 2 and you're a 10, I'm going to level up. Yeah. If there's no way I'm going to come. That's why people go let's go hang out. What are we going to do? I don't know. Or we're going to go, let's go fishing. Come on, man. Throw the line. Look, you got to fish up. You find a way to level up. But if you weren't around that person, you'd feel sad. So when you're in those funky places, be around those who are more joyous.
I love it. Borrow joy. Anthony, it was so great to meet you. Thank you again for being here. It was a pleasure.
Yeah. Same.
Before we wrap today, I want to invite you to be part of the Becoming is Messy community. Subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss a single episode. And if there's anything that resonates with you, please leave a review. Your feedback means the world to me, and it helps other people find this community. Follow me on social media. I'd love to hear your ideas for future topics, your questions, and stories from your own messy moments. And if you're feeling inspired, check out the Becoming is Messy shop, where you can grab a mug, a t-shirt, or something else that reminds you to embrace your messy magic every single day. A huge thank you to the incredible Wolves and Sheep for providing the music for Becoming is Messy. Check them out on your favorite music streaming platform. As we close out today's episode, remember this: messy is just another word for growing. So keep showing up, keep laughing, and keep making beautifully awkward progress. Until next time, stay messy, my friends.